Swing and a drive.
Welcome to Red, White, and Blue Jays, the podcast home of Blue Jays Fans UK, a group connecting Blue Jays fans around the UK and beyond and telling their stories. And now, here's the host of Red, White, and Blue Jays, Steve Hunter.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Red, White, and Blue Jays. In fact, this is episode 45, so grateful for all the guests that we've had on. And I'm really thrilled to welcome Blake today. I've been chasing Blake. Actually, we spoke last season and we just didn't quite get it sorted out. But here we are, 2023. Amazing warm welcome to the UK to Blake Murphy from Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. How are you doing, sir? Welcome to the UK.
Thank you for having me, Steve. Glad we finally found a time that worked out. Sorry it's taken us a bit.
Hey, no worries. I appreciate how much you've got on your plate. And because you've just come hot off the commentating duties with Ben Shulman as well. How was that?
It's good. It's so I've done, I think, 21 games now this year. And it's, it's an experience. It's difficult and it's a very fun challenge. And it's been really cool because it's not something that I ever really considered getting a chance to do, not only because it's typically something that ex-players or ex-coaches do in that role, but also so much of my career has been on the basketball side it's been really fun and fascinating to get a crack at this. And I hope I'm getting better at it as we go here. I've got a couple left for the season.
Great. Yeah, we find over here, because obviously the time difference, I've said to a lot of guests actually I've had from Sportsnet, that the radio is often a medium that I think is really useful for us. So if it's some really late games, I might have, you know, the AirPods in and listening to you guys on the radio rather than watching the TV coverage. So we really appreciate all that you bring to us. And it'd be fascinating to hear you. Presumably you're doing that from Toronto, i.e. rather than being out at the game itself.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a home game, we'll be doing it from Rogers Centre. But we just do it at a Toronto for the road games.
Yeah, but, well, you'd never know. Such is the you know what you guys are putting out. So, brilliant job, Blake. I'd love to, before we get into talking a little bit about the Jays and what we think's happening this season, it'd be great to hear a little bit about your story. I've always tried to do that with the guests that I've had on this pod because I think it's really good just to get a bit of a backdrop to how you ended up doing what you do. So take us back, childhood dreams, college days, all that stuff, good, the bad, the ugly. We want to hear it.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a convoluted path. So, I mean, childhood-wise, I was a hockey player until I was maybe 16 or so. Thought, you know, hey, maybe I'll get good enough to play junior or something. And here in Canada, that's a big deal. It turns out I was not good enough. And then, you know, that's a good thing for a lot of reasons. But also, you know, last couple of years of high school, kind of ditched hockey and got to do a little bit of everything else, a little bit of baseball, lacrosse, wrestling, basketball, all sorts of stuff, and kind of opened myself up to, I had been like a baseball fan, but really I was just hockey, hockey, hockey. And then, so baseball gets in, basketball gets in, a few other things. So for college, I had always loved sports a lot, but I didn't really think that was like a thing you could do necessarily. So I went to business school. I applied to a bunch of different universities for a bunch of different programs, had no idea what I wanted to do. I was like, okay, business keeps the most options open. And then when I was done business school, I did the exact same thing again and just applied for law schools all over because I didn't know what I wanted to do. And then I ended up deferring. So I got accepted to law school and I was going down that route, but I deferred my acceptance because I couldn't afford to go yet. I need to make some money. But also a small part of me, I had been doing a little bit of blogging just for fun. So, you know, writing a basketball thing here and there, a baseball thing here and there. So that would have been the 2008 Blue Jays season, would have been the first time I was dabbling with that. And then, yeah, so I defer my law school. And then during that year, I started blogging a little bit more, dabbling with some analytics stuff. A little bit more on the baseball side with that, but some hockey and basketball too. And then eventually, fast forward, I decided I'm going to try to do the sports thing instead. So that was maybe 3 years removed from undergrad. I went to University of British Columbia to get a master's of journalism, thinking like that was the proper way to transition. I dropped out after a year. Basically, there was a company here in Canada called The Score, for anyone who has the app on their phones where you could check all the scores and see news and stuff. They wanted to hire me out. And my advisor was like, yeah, if this doesn't work out, you're not going to use a journalism degree. It's at this point, 2013. And now definitely in 2023, you're not going to use your journalism degree. You're going to use your business degree. So I did that. I went to The Score. Part of the idea at The Score was, you know, I could do every sport. I could do hockey, baseball, basketball, a little bit of football, boxing, UFC, whatever. But pretty quickly there, I kind of got narrowed in on basketball. I was one of our top basketball guys. So that's kind of the point of my career where I wasn't an every sport person. That's where I started focusing in on basketball. After two years there, I went to do my own thing full time. And at that point, I was a little more established on basketball. I'd still do some baseball stuff. I was writing for FanGraphs and Beyond the Box Score and dabbling a couple other places. Especially when it came to like analytics or fantasy baseball stuff. But most of my stuff was Raptors at that point. And then when the Raptors traded for Kawhi Leonard before the year that they won the championship, the Athletic wanted to hire me full time. I had been freelancing for them for a long time. Sorry. I landed there full time, did a couple years there. And like that was kind of funny because on the baseball side, I would just, Caitlin McGrath is obviously terrific at the Athletic. But there would be the odd time where she was off, or I remember the day Marcus Stroman got traded, she had to catch a flight to Kansas City for the next series. So I was there the day Marcus Stroman got traded and there was drama and the clubhouse is closed and all that kind of stuff. About 2 years ago now, decided to make the move to Sportsnet and do a little bit more radio, a little bit more TV. And it wasn't like a conscious plan of like, let's get back to the baseball side or anything like that. I've always been pretty agnostic as to which of the two sports between baseball and basketball I do. But the way things have played out there, I've gotten a lot of opportunities to do Jay's stuff the last 2 years. So yeah, that's the quick version somehow. It's still that long.
Yeah, that's brilliant. In fact, we had Caitlin on last episode. So it was great to hear her story and how she got into doing what she's doing at The Athletic and doing a great, great job there. So it's interesting your paths cross so much. We love what you bring to us, and it's always good just to hear a little bit of the backstory to what you're doing. And I guess working in radio, does that take a different mindset in terms of how you are thinking about what you need to say? Versus obviously TV coverage, where that's obviously being seen visually. What adjustments have you had to make to think that through?
Yeah, and especially coming from a primarily writing background, it's a huge shift where, you know, when you write an article, you know that you have someone's investment for the length of that article. Maybe they bail on it halfway through or whatever, but you've got a little bit of time. Obviously, in TV, everything is pretty snappy. So, you know, one of the things someone gave me an exercise to kind of work on, just to kind of paint the picture here of radio versus TV versus writing. So, you know, here's a question, like, who is the number one player the Toronto Blue Jays should go at the trade deadline, right? If I've got an article, I've got like 1500 words, a couple graphs and things like that I could use to paint that. If I'm on radio, an answer that goes longer than like 5 minutes is probably losing a listener at some point. And then if I'm on TV, I've maybe only got 90 seconds or even 60 seconds. So you take the same question and you answer it for 5 minutes, then answer it for 3 minutes, then answer it for 1 minute, and just kind of learn how to narrow what you're talking about. Now, TV, you also have the benefit of visuals, and you can play some video, some highlights, or put a table or a graph up or something like that. You don't have that with radio, but it's a big difference in terms of the pacing, and a big difference in terms of, you know, the engagement of the audience, not in terms of how engaged they are, but like the style of engagement where, you know, I've got a 2-hour radio show. I have to anticipate some people are just in the car for 5 minutes, but there are also some people who are listening to that whole thing or check it out on podcast versus, you know, TV. It's kind of, I'm in and out. My hands are clean of it. I don't have to tell you another thing about Genesis Cabrera for 2 weeks now after I get my TV spot in on Friday about him. So there are a couple different differences like that. And then, yeah, coming from the writing side where like everything. You can plan everything out writing. You can be methodical with how you set the story up, with your pacing in the story. You know, even something like pocketing a story for later, like to use the Genesis Cabrera example, you know, Friday they acquire him. So TV and radio, I got to be ready to talk about that. He could come into the game later that weekend and I'm on the call. I'm doing a Blue Jay Central hit on it. But if I were a beat writer, if I'm in, say, Caitlin McGrath's position, maybe I'm taking a little bit of time talking to a couple sources, you know, working out a longer story. So there's a lot to do with pacing and, you know, what the audience can and can't give you across the different mediums.
Yeah, fascinating insight. Brilliant. Right. Let's talk about what we got you here for. So Blue Jays 2023 version. Just opening question, let's just sort of do some high level stuff really. The 2023 team on paper feels like it should be better than the 2022 team, and yet I think there's a lot of people are sort of feeling that's not quite the case. You know, obviously the series that we've just had against Seattle, close games in all of the three games, managed to pick up the win last night. But just generally, the feel of this team doesn't feel quite like it did in the previous couple of seasons. What's your sort of overarching thoughts of how the Jays are performing thus far?
Yeah, I think you're accurate. First of all, I think that's a good read on it and a good kind of pulse of where this team's at. Even though the record is the exact same, the expectations were a little bit higher this year. You know, there were expectations last year too, going from missing the playoffs by one game and that silly quote of you saw the trailer, now it's the movie, and now it's the, you know, now it's the sequel and it's not off to a very good start. So I think there are a couple things that go into that, and the biggest one is just where your expectations are entering the season. Last year, they had gotten back to the playoffs and it was a disappointing end, but you look compared to the year prior and the year prior to that, and you can see the kind of upward trend. But the upward trend after last year and after kind of the 3 years that preceded this season are not just sneak into the playoffs. Like, you're supposed to be in World Series contention mode now. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is in his second year of arbitration, making $14 million. Bo Bichette's into his arb years. You have spent significantly in trade chips and money on a starting rotation where everyone in that rotation is making good money except for Alek Manoah. You have made the investments now and operated front office wise and roster experience wise. Like, you're a team that's ready to contend now. So I think, you know, the expectations were a little weightier this time around, and being a wild card team, even though we understand how the playoff format works in the American League East, et cetera, feeling like a barely got in wild card team does not feel nearly as good this year as it may have last year, where the, you know, the primary goal was to just get in. Now, within that, I think there's also a lot of feeling of missed opportunity this year. You can go back to, you know, there were stretches of this season where they were one of the very worst teams in baseball hitting with runners in scoring position. And that's a thing that's gonna ebb and flow. And by the end of the year, most teams will probably be close to their overall talent level hitting with runners in scoring position. But to date, that means that there have been a lot of opportunities in games where the Toronto Blue Jays had chances to win and couldn't come through. A lot of, you know, even though the record's good in one-run games, look at these last six games. 2 1-run losses to the Mariners, 2 tight losses to the Padres where they couldn't get much on the board. You know, a game against Blake Snell, they ended up winning, but had 12 base runners on in the first 5 innings and only managed 1 run. When you are dealing with that week to week and series to series, there has been this kind of, I think, snowball effect of, well, 2 out of 3 could have been 3 out of 3, or 1 out of 3 should have been 2 out of 3. And then it becomes, well, 5 out of 10 should have been 6 or 7 out of 10. And now you look in 55 and 45 should maybe be, you know, let's say they're average with runners in scoring position. Had they hit their normal average in those situations to date, I think it would have been worth something like 15 or 16 runs, we estimate. Well, that's the difference of, you know, 3 or 4 extra wins in the win column when we look at run differential. And obviously we're painting with a broad brush here analytically, but the difference between what they've done and what we'd expect with runners in scoring position could be a couple extra wins. So maybe, you know, hey, 1 out of 3 should have been 2 out of 3, 5 out of 10 should have been 6 out of 10. Now we're sitting here and it's 55 out of 100, should have been 58 or 59 out of 100. And maybe in April or May, it didn't feel like that would be that big a deal because the Tampa Bay Rays were running away with the division so dramatically. But we're now looking at American League East, where the Baltimore Orioles are two games ahead of the Rays. The Jays are 6.5 back, despite not playing particularly good baseball. Had the Jays taken care of some of those missed opportunities, you'd be very firmly in a division race right now, where it'd be you, Tampa Bay, and Baltimore all neck and neck, especially if you could have come up with some wins within division. So I think, you know, the expectations plays a part of it. The part where, you know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Alek Manoah, who had very large individual expectations, haven't played up to those expectations. But the biggest thing to me is this team, it's not only a feel and an on paper should have been better. You go back through the games, there are a large handful of games that they weren't able to come through where they had wins on the table. And, you know, sure, the bullpen's been really good. So maybe in an average season, the bullpen coughs up more games. I don't know, but it's hard not to look at the body of work to date and feel like they've left a couple important wins on the table. And I think that's probably why this feels like it feels, despite the record being the same as last year.
Yeah, I think you summarized that really well. I wonder whether we joked at the beginning of the season when they announced that the home run jacket was no more. Do you feel that sort of sense of excitement? You know, you can't blame it all on the jacket, clearly, but that sort of joy that they had as a team last year, obviously with Lourdes and Teoscar moving on, they were big characters in the dugout. You obviously got guys who still like to have a good time, but just that real sense of joy of playing. Do you feel that is at the same level as it was last season?
I don't think it has been, but I don't know how much of that is, you know, just personnel related, where I loved watching Teoscar, and I think I had more patience with Lourdes Gurriel Jr. than most, because I thought the antics were funny, and I thought, you know, the bad routes in left field, well, who cares? It just sets him up for the opportunity to throw more guys out on the bases. And I think some of the guys they brought in are still, you know, on the lighter end. Varsho's not really going to joke around, but Brandon Belt's a bit of a goofy guy. And, you know, you have a guy like Chapman who, what we see on camera is very serious, but behind the scenes, he's a bit of a goofball as well. As I understand it, Caitlin McGrath actually had a terrific piece on that at the Athletic a couple weeks back. So I don't know that it's necessarily that, or what we just talked about with the expectations and the missed opportunities that has sucked the joy out. So I think it's a bit of a chicken or the egg, where I certainly agree that they feel like they're not as joyful a team as last year, but I don't know if it's, hey, they're not as joyful a team, and that's making them a little tight in big spots and, you know, not able to execute on the opportunities, or it's, they keep missing opportunities and that's making them tight and, you know, the joy is lacking a little bit there. So I agree that it's there. I'm just not sure what direction, you know, the causation is on that one.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just focus on a couple of key individuals. You've already mentioned Alek Manoah. Obviously nobody could foresee his season playing out in the way that it has. His return was quite quick, which I think surprised a lot of people. I thought we would see him, you know, in the minors for some time just to be absolutely sure. And then his sort of, you know, rising from the ashes was quite quick and performed well against Detroit. And then, of course, then had his shocking outing. He was pretty good, or steady at least, against Seattle. How do you see Alex's season going from here on in? Do you think he's going to be able to pick it up, or is it really hard to make those sort of in-game, in-season adjustments that he needs to make?
I think some of what he needs to work on is very difficult to do in the middle of the season. I think there is a, you know, there's a conditioning component to that. There is a mechanical component to that. There is a mental component to that. Now, I think he can do enough on the fly to get back to being a capable, you know, if we look at the way this rotation set up, could Alek Manoah be their number five starter the rest of the way and every fifth game out go five innings? I think that's a reasonable thing to hang on him, but I don't think the ability to get back to that Cy Young caliber guy is going to happen in season, because you need to rediscover some velocity. You need to work on the shape of your slider. You need to potentially, you know, scrap and rebuild from scratch your change up. On top of which, I don't know, like, how many good starts in a row would he need before the psychological part clicks in the first time he walks two batters in a row. Or like happened against the Padres, you get pinched on a third strike against Juan Soto and you kind of let it build on you and snowball on you from there. I don't know from the mental side, you know, how much clearance he needs to put that behind him. But I think mechanically and, you know, I especially think of the slider that has, even before he got sent to the minors, some of the metrics that we have available, there were red flags. There were warning signs of, hey, this slider isn't what it used to be. There's something off here. Now, having said that, I thought his game against Seattle was the best his sliders looked all year. Not universally every single one, but he got 10 swing and misses with it. He had a couple with big, big break on it. So maybe some signs for encouragement there. But yeah, I think, you know, big picture, no, there's no chance that 2022 Alek Manoah is back at some point this year. I would bet against any of us even being comfortable with him starting a playoff game at this point in time. But with where this team's at, it's probably enough for them if he can go every fifth game and just be competent, if not Cy Young level. Maybe that accounting changes a little bit with Hyunjin Ryu coming back into the mix. But I think this is also part of, you mentioned how quick the return was. It was barely a month. And I think a big part of that was, well, you got to see where Alek Manoah's at before the trade deadline, because Manoah decision, Ryu decision, and trade deadline decision all coming up in the next week here.
Yeah. I just going to mention about Ryu, his return. How do you see that slotting into the rotation? Because Kikuchi had, he wasn't too bad against Seattle, but his previous outing wasn't great. Do you see that platooning a bit? Would you think they'd look at six man rotation for a season and then just work out who their five are?
Yeah, I'm not a big believer in the six man rotation for too long, because I think this bullpen's already been too overworked, and then you're running a man short in the bullpen for as long as you have a six man rotation. I don't love that. I think it's a tough spot for Kikuchi, where on merit, he's not the guy who should go to the bullpen. But if you look at all the starters and you say, well, okay, this is his stuff as a starter, this is what his stuff would be as a reliever, who would get the biggest boost? It's Kikuchi. Kikuchi could be a lights out reliever, especially now that he has some of the control issues from last year under control. Last year, he struck out everyone out of the bullpen. He just gave up way too many walks as well. Now that he has the control and the command a little better, I really do think he could be a lights out weapon out of the bullpen. It's just a little unfair to him because he hasn't been the worst starter. So I think there's a scenario where they've got this stretch of 17 games in 17 days coming up after Thursday. I think there's a scenario where they run a six-man rotation twice through the rotation there, see where Ryu's at, see where Manoah's at, and just kind of punt that decision down the line a little bit. But long term, they're going to have to decide on five guys here, because you can't, you know, even if it's just for the month of August, going an entire month with your bullpen short a guy when three of your starters are probably only being trusted with five innings, I would just really worry about the wear and tear there. So they'll have to make a decision on one of them. You know, Dan Shulman is very fond of saying these things have a way of working themselves out. Sorry. And, you know, maybe there's an injury or performance issue that we're not anticipating. So this is not a great answer, because I don't know what it's going to be. I think on merit, the thing that would make the most sense is if Alek Manoah continues to struggle, he goes back down. But there is more to that decision than just the merit of August and September here in 2023. So maybe, you know, Kikuchi's probably working out of the pen at some point, if we're being honest with it, and we're looking ahead to the playoffs, because that's probably his best role in the postseason anyway. Yeah, we'll see as we go start to start here. I'd be surprised, though, if we see a six-man rotation more than twice through the order. That to me is just too much on the bullpen beyond twice through.
Sure. It's fun to guess, though, isn't it? You know, trying to work out what John Snyder is going to do.
Makes for good podcast and radio.
Yeah, totally. It gives us a lot to talk about. Just on the trade deadline, do you think that in the market for a pitcher, is that where you think their money will be?
I would lean more toward the hitter side. I don't love the depth that they have pitching wise, but and I'm firmly a believer you always need more bullpen arms. I think a guy who can give multiple innings and then, you know, not not a Mitch White, because the Mitch White acquisition has not turned out well at all, but someone who's played in both roles, can swing around a little bit. I know Michael Lorenzen from Detroit's a popular name like that. Jordan Hicks from St. Louis was starting as recently as last year. Someone who is likelier to be asked to give you two innings out of the bullpen, but could start in a pinch, something like that, I think would be realistic. But if we're, you know, if we were only allowed to pick one thing, I think I would lean on the hitting side, because, you know, Manoah side, the hitting side has been a bigger issue to me this season.
Yeah. Just one last question on pitching. Nate Pearson optioned back to AAA. Bit of a surprise, because he had performed pretty well. You know, he wasn't great in his last outing, but versus Mitch White, who has been lights out awful, how do they make that decision to put Pearson down and not White?
So I think there are two things at play here. And the first one is that they have some things with Nate Pearson's breaking ball that they'd like him to work on, and they'd like him to make some adjustments with. And the preference is you're working on those adjustments in minor league games that don't hurt the major league club. The bigger one, though, is that Mitch White is out of options. So if they wanted to send Mitch White down, they would have to designate him for assignment. If he gets claimed, you lose him as organization depth. Now, I think by the end of the trade deadline, Mitch White is off the 40-man roster anyway. I think that's going to happen. But what this lets you do is punt that decision down the line a little bit. Hey, maybe there's a bad team that has a place for Mitch White. I actually think Mitch White makes the minimum, and he's got a couple years of control left. I think if you're a team like Kansas City or Detroit, who you're going to trade some pieces away at the deadline, Mitch White is a reasonable flyer for you. Hey, let's get this guy in. If we can rehab a little bit of his value, maybe give him a chance to start, or let him go a couple bullpen innings without, you know, being in a playoff race. As a bad team, I think that's a reasonable buy low. So I think part of it is, yeah, you give yourself an extra week here to see what happens at the deadline. And if maybe there's a home for Mitch White rather than just designating him for assignment, and then you risk losing him for nothing.
Right. Okay. Well, let's just last few minutes we've got with you, Blake. Let's talk about the hitting, which has been a bit up and down. Where'd you put your finger on it in terms of why it's been more of a struggle? Obviously, Vladdy has taken a while to get going. Well, it's good to see him starting to pick up now. Bo's been pretty consistent. Springer's started well, but is just in a little bit of a slump at the moment. Where do you go with why the guys have struggled to get bat on ball?
Yeah, it's a little tough to diagnose team-wide, and I certainly don't have a good answer for all the stuff with runners in scoring position. You know, everything we know analytically says by the end of 162 games, you are who you are. It doesn't matter the runners in scoring position, bases empty, whatever. You'll get back there. The Blue Jays and the Padres are counter to that. They're trying to see if it's possible to just be terrible in one situation and good in the other. So I don't have a good explanation for that. I think team-wide, there's a pretty clear lack of home run power that maybe they didn't anticipate here. You know, Vlad now back to the team lead in home runs. Those are starting to come a little bit, but I think they would have expected a couple more home runs from Dalton Varsho at this point. You know, maybe some of Matt Chapman's doubles to have cleared the wall. Alejandro Kirk's power has completely disappeared with the exception of that home run in the Padres series. So I think it's, you know, you add up all those little things, Varsho a little worse than expected, Kirk a little worse than expected, Vlad a little worse than expected. And all of those things kind of add up to more than the sum of their parts, because, you know, it's fewer guys on base, and then it's, you know, fewer times through the order, and you're not getting as deep into the opponent's bullpen. I don't want to hang it all on home runs, but this team being a below average home run hitting team is not something that I think they anticipated. And that we can even control for the fact that Rogers Center hasn't played very hitter friendly. It's been more pitcher friendly, and even controlling for that, the Jays offense just looks good, not great. So I think that's a big one. And then I think maybe they just still need another piece. And I know a lot of the additions in the offseason were about coming up with some balance and some versatility, getting a couple lefties in, things like that. But with the exception of Brandon Belt, and with Brandon Belt, it's primarily his ability to draw walks, you know, highest OBP on the team and highest walk rate in baseball the last month or so. This line up, at least in the top middle part, the top six, say, still feels maybe a bat short. And I don't think they're going to be big shoppers in that regard. I think their approach will be to shore up some of the depth positions and maybe get guys a few extra days off and things like that. But I do think maybe the lineup is a bat short of where we expected them to be. You can't hang that all on one guy. But, you know, if I'm looking at who the biggest underperformer is relative to my expectations offensively, this team was hitting Dalton Varsho in the three spot and the four spot in spring training at early in the season. For him to be a guy that has an OPS barely above 600 is that's a time. I think they thought he could develop into a middle of the order bat at some point. And certainly it's gone the opposite way.
Do you think batting order, because John Schneider seems to be fairly set in his ways in terms of who he wants, where there's not a lot of movement up and down the order. Do you think just sometimes absolutely jumbling that up a bit would bring some life?
I don't think it hurts, especially when things are going poorly. I'm all for a blender game where you just throw them out wherever. You know, analytically speaking, batting order doesn't make the specific batting order doesn't make a huge, huge difference game to game. The most important thing is getting your best players up as often as possible. So, you know, if that were the only thing we were looking at, Bo and Vlad would probably hit 1-2. And then, you know, you'd go some combination of Belt, Springer, Chapman. As long as Springer's stuck in the leadoff spot, that's not going to happen. But really, you know, from an analytics standpoint, all you care about is make sure your best guys are getting the most plate appearances.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, Blake. Well, just one last question, which I touch on with most of my guests, particularly for you guys in Canada. Obviously, speaking into a UK fan base here, not sure how well you're aware of the number of Jays fans here in the UK. There are a lot of us. London series we've just had recently with Cubs Cardinals. Ever fancy coming over for a trip with the Jays one day?
Oh, I would love that. If the Jays get one of those games, it's something I've wanted to do on the basketball side as well. There's a team, the London Lions, that have a ton of connections to the Toronto Raptors. Their coach last year was a former Raptors coach. OG Anunoby is a part owner. They've got a bunch of guys who used to play for Raptors 905. So I'd love to come over for that. I'd love to come over for Jays. I know those seasons don't really overlap, but maybe there's a way I can do both. I'd love to get a chance to see Fulham, go out to Craven there and check that out. So yeah, there's a trip there in my future. We'll wait for the Jays to get one of those games so that it's not out of my own pocket. It's out of the Sportsnet pocket.
Well, I'm gonna have to ask you now, why Fulham?
This is a terrible answer. I'm not a big soccer guy. So, okay. But in American football, my team is the Jacksonville Jaguars, and they're the same ownership as Fulham, the Khan family. So when I was trying to figure out a Premier League team to follow and call my own, it was like, well, it's the same family as the Jacksonville Jaguars. The year that I made that decision, Fulham got relegated. So it did not work out very well. It's been a bit of a mess.
Yeah, welcome to the British sport of relegation and promotion. It's cutthroat. Yeah, well, of course, the Jags as well are the adopted NFL team here in the UK. So you definitely need to come over and watch them play. I think I've seen them twice since they've been here. So, nice. Good stuff. Blake, thanks ever so much for your time today. Really cool chatting with you. Just remind us where people can find you and what shows you're on at the moment.
Yeah, it's what am I on at the moment? Okay, so Jays Talk Plus is 10 a.m. to 12 a.m. Eastern, and then in the Blue Jays Talk podcast feed, we'll have extended hours for the trade deadline next week. So if people are tuning in for deadline day, I don't know the specifics, but I know I'm going to 3 hours that day as well. And then, yeah, I don't have any games on the broadcast coming up. I think my next one is that Philadelphia Phillies series. But, I mean, you can always check out all the Sportsnet stuff anyway.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And hopefully we'll get you back on at some other point. That would be great to talk to you again.
I'd love to. Thanks so much for having me, Stephen.
All right. See you soon. Take care.
The Red, White, and Blue Jays podcast is a production of Blue Jays Fans UK. If you've got a Blue Jays story to share, let us know. Email us at bluejaysfansuk@gmail.com. And follow along on Twitter and Instagram at Blue Jays Fans UK. I'm your announcer, Jim Langton. Thanks for listening.